Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Thank you, Jamie.
Sorry.
You had to try because Anthony wasn't here to support the hurrah. So guys, we're here to talk about a film. I'm Richard Nicholas, hello. And chatting about a film with me is Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And JB Thomas.
Hello.
The film was selected by Abby, and that film is The Hand. Abby, do you want to give us the details, like who directed it, who's in it, etc., and then we'll start talking about it in a podcast, film-based manner.
Okay. We are watching The Hand from 1981, directed by Oliver Stone, written by Oliver Stone based on the novel The Lizard's Tale by Mark Brandel, starring Michael Caine, Andrea Markovici, and Annie McGrow. Bruce McGill is also in this.
Well, is it the lizard's tail or the lizard's like tail as in a story? Like, you know,
I think it's the physical part.
Okay. Yeah. There's only a small reference to a lizard's tail in it, and it's kind of terrible and pointless. Like, it's really badly, like, the prop is terrible and it's edited to just that. I don't know anything about the book, but I'm glad The Hand makes more sense as a title. I don't know, you know, like, I guess I'm just speculating now about a book I haven't read, so that's pointless. We should talk about the film we've seen, right?
Yes.
Abby, you should start by explaining why you chose it for us to watch, and me and Jamie will tell you our expectations before we watched it.
I saw The Hand originally as part of McGillivray last year.
Go on, you're going to have to contextualise what that means.
McGillivray was a Bruce McGill season that I had. Which didn't go especially well, but I did get The Hand.
So McGillivray combines Bruce McGill with the month of January, and you just watched, and I did, watched a bunch of Bruce McGill films. But it turns out he's not in the films he's in that much. He's always a bit part, usually, isn't he?
Yes. There are a couple of exceptions, but not many.
So you got you via Bruce McGill, who is in this a bit, but, you know, not the main character.
Yes, he wears a poncho a lot in this.
And is plays drunk.
Yes.
So why Bruce McGill, Abby? I mean, that's, you know, I mean, Michael Caine, watching a film because Michael Caine's in it, people do that. We're doing that. We've been watching a bunch of Michael Caine films, this included. But what about Bruce McGill?
Bruce McGill is a that guy, and I was embracing the that guys of this world. Which didn't pan out all that well.
No offence, Bruce McGill. You've got some good films, good actor, but you need bigger parts, mate. That's all. Bit of a prep talk for Bruce McGill. Anyway, back to The Hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
You watched it a little while ago, but you thought, hey, this will be worth chatting about, so why was that?
I don't like horror movies very much, but this one I like because...
It's silly?
I tend to prefer things that are more psychological than gore.
Well, there's quite a lot of practical effects that are not gory, but, you know, they're
bad.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely the word for it. But, you know, it's not altogether psychological, is it? I mean, it does have a lot of a severed hand attacking people.
And I think, like, yes, the effects are bad, but I find it sort of endearing in this particular case.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's borderline a comedy, I think. I think it should be sold on the fact that it's not so much a horror film as a hilarious satire of the genre, to be honest. Jamie, what were you expecting when this came up as an option?
pretty much what I got, I think. Like... I am surprised that this was directed by Oliver Stone.
I know, right?
He's one of those names, isn't he? It's like Oliver Stone. Ooh, you know, you instantly think of something. You think of JFK or Natural Born Killers or that kind of thing. But this was just, it's like.
Well, it was only the second thing he made.
I know, the trailer just made it look so like schlocky and cheap and a bit rubbish, and that's what it was.
Yeah, but the thing that I liked about the trailer was how, because it was, you know, different parts of the film at different times, as they often are, it meant that It meant that Michael Caine's hair radically changed from being really mad and insane and then really kempt and tidy. Which, and then in the film it progresses into a mad kind of haystack of craziness. But in the trailer it's just like, wow, he some stuff happens to this guy to muzz his hair up this much.
Yeah.
it seemed like a silly premise. And it was. But they were trying to do a psychological thing, weren't they? It is kind of like, before there was Fight Club, there was the hand, and instead of imagining fighting a man, the guy imagines a hand. Spoilers. I mean, it's called spoiler-filled, so I'm sorry. But the hand isn't really come to life and kill people. It's his mind. Or is it? Yeah. There's ambiguity. No, there isn't. It's really stupid to believe. Like, that's the problem for me, just to straightly get into it, is it kind of expects you to think, oh, maybe his hand, after it's severed, is killing people. Maybe he's controlling it. No, he's insane now. That's obviously what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
So there's no sense of, what's it all about?
It's never made clear even whether or not he's controlling it. Like, it becomes that. Like, at first it seems like the hand is, like, attacking people almost to, like, protect him.
Mm.
And then it starts to say that, oh, no, he's been doing it all along. He's known the whole time. And then the hand attacks and tries to kill him.
Yeah.
And then it goes, ah, but it was him all along. And it turns out it wasn't. It was actually the hand all along. And he laughs.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's the thing is, the premise is just so, you don't do this. If you cut the premise, you go, oh, that sounds funny. And it is funny, but you don't do it as a horror. You do it as a comedy. I still think this kind of is a comedy. Like, I don't think I've laughed so much through a horror film. You know,
I think the problem is comedy is like intent.
But some of the practical effects are kind of just naive enough. They're kind of like, you're a good student, but you're not ready yet. And it means that lots of the, like, shots of, people who are dead's head, like, with their tongue out and their eyes all squinty and, like, a pale face look ridiculous. And anything they do, like, at one point, my favourite bit is when the cat is a bit upset that Michael Caine owns, and it kind of just bursts through a window, and it's so clearly, it's just clearly, like, a stuffed taxidermy cat or whatever.
What I like about the cat is they have the most unpleasant and aggressive pet cat. You see the cat twice, and both times it basically attacks members of the family.
And it eats like the lizard tail that's in the garden that's twitching really amazingly badly. They obviously just like moved it. Like, it's almost like stock animation, the way it moved. It's like, what are you doing? You couldn't do a little moving lizard's tail? You managed to do a rather terribly unconvincing hand that could pulse and do things a bit. The lizard's tail bit, particularly terrible looking. But it's all just, you know, it's full of these practical effects, but they're just so naive. And yet, they're good enough, but not, they just don't work today.
To be fair, his Inspector Gadget villain, Claw, replacement hand is not too bad.
Oh, the kind of
I like that it's so it was too expensive to have in every scene, so they just put a glove on it.
Good. That's a good get round though, and it creates a kind of like the guy, the German guy from Doctor Strangelove thing.
Yeah,
like he's clenching his black fist in his glove, and like there's an element of like he can't control his hand, and that all ties into like Doctor Strangelove character. And again, you know, it makes sense. Comedy. Having a hand you can't control is funny, right?
Yes,
it is.
Yeah.
One thing that I kind of wanted to bring up was it's about a hand that moves on its own. And it's called a hand, but it could so easily have been called the thing. And it could have been like the character from Adam's Family, the severed hand that wanders around on its own. And it feels like it's kind of a horror film that could have been made by John Carpenter. So it could have been John Carpenter's The Other Thing, and it could have been like an Addams Family prequel, I reckon.
I think it would have been more entertaining had the hand in this skateboarded on a tiny skateboard like Thing does in Addams Family.
Yeah, and it would have worked. It would have been a comedy, and it would have been the origin story. And then after this film, he goes off to live with the Addams Family. Makes perfect sense. So that's my theory, is that Michael Caine's hand is the thing from Adam's Family. So, and it could have been directed by John Carpenter. if it had been a little bit better. But John Carpenter does make some schlock as well, so, you know, that's just a weird point
well,
to bring up.
He does, but when he makes schlock, he makes, like, entertaining schlock, whereas one of my major problems with this film is it was so boring.
They throw a cat through a window. It's hilarious.
Like, no, there are parts of it. That's the thing. All the parts that aren't really dull are really unintentionally funny. Like Michael Caine fighting his own severed hand in the garage.
That was amazing, wasn't
it? It was like someone had taken, not that Evil Dead 2 came after, but it was like that scene where Bruce Campbell fights his own hand, but tried to play it completely straight.
It is remarkable. Any scene where the hand just somehow attacks people, it's ridiculous. I mean, you can't get over the fact that they've got a prop attached to them and they're going, oh no, like, oh, don't kill me. It's not that bad, but it's just so, come on, we can't buy this. There's no way a hand is attacking you, so, like, shut up. It's just people being silly. And they all commit to it, in fairness. None of them give a knowing look to the camera of, I know, but I'm paid, so I'll carry on.
I thought I could not figure out Michael Caine's performance because he's rubbish at this. Like, his delivery of all his lines is so, like, weirdly paced and stilted, and, like, it's like he's making fun of the people who make fun of him for the way he talks. That's how he talks through the whole film.
I sort of know what you mean. I got the impression that he doesn't know how to play straight crazy, if that makes any sense. He can be a goofball as you like, but as soon as you ask him to be an actual stone-cold psycho, no.
Yeah, he just goes kind of mental.
Well, what's weird is his character isn't a very sympathetic one, but his wife is so much less sympathetic. Like, it's the story of this guy going crazy and being alone and having lost his hand. I mean, the dude's set up as an illustrator who draws a comic called, was it like Mandro?
Mandro.
The lamest name and somehow bizarrely masculine sounding. And it's some kind of fantasy comic. And okay, he's severed his hand in a brutal accident. That's his wife's fault as well, which is annoying for him.
Yeah.
And he's got this issue now. He's lost the thing. He's lost his hand. He's lost the thing. He's lost hand. Whatever. You get what I'm saying? And that's a problem. His career is essentially over. He can't draw anymore. He just, you know, he's got that problem. His wife's been trying to slowly leave him without saying, I'm leaving. And he's left alone and he goes crazy. But there's not much more to him than that. And Michael Caine, you know, he may be doing not his best performance ever, but I still think he's still good in whatever he does. I mean, him.
Yeah, no, he is entertaining. And I don't know whether this is like, because it says this is one of his, like, paycheck movies, like Jaws the Revenge and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I got the impression that he knew when he was filming this that it was terrible. Like, he has no real investment, so he just kind of hams it up as much as he wants. Which is, like,
but it works in the favour of it being a comedy.
it makes it more like if someone was.
You can't do this film straight. The best actor in the world couldn't have sold us on the idea that a man thinks his hand comes to life and attacks people.
See, I don't know. I think it, with the right director and the right actor, you could, like, if you put some proper thought into a story like this, you could make something pretty decent.
But, would you care to speculate on who those people might be? It's all right if you don't care to. I was just asking.
I think later Oliver Stone would have maybe been fine, but he's kind of gone beyond cheesy horror now.
Mm.
But I don't know who the right actor would be. Eddie Murphy.
Right, go on.
No, I
could have seen I could see it being mad, like, Christian Bale is someone I'd cast in this, because I think he'd take it seriously despite not, he wouldn't realise it was stupid, and he would
take it so seriously, he'd be a bit, well, actually, yeah, it would work, because he'd be frightening, because he is whenever he does really serious stuff.
And he'd actually chop his hand off to re-get into the role, I reckon.
Yeah.
Ah, I don't know, man, I don't think there's anyone who can rescue the premise alone, but I'm happy for you to.
I don't think it's a terrible premise. I just think nobody really, like, like I was saying before, nobody put any thought into exactly where they wanted it to go. So one minute, his severed hand is killing people to, like, protect him. And the next minute, he's controlling it, which is never explained. And then it attacks him for no real reason. And then he's insane, and then he's not.
Well, I think it's a sort of... He's spiraling from sane to more insane. And I think the idea is... He's, like... I guess the creative illustrator in him has come up with a kind of solution to his frustrations. And it's that the hand is still out there, and it's sort of... Initially, he doesn't really... Like, he's kind of unaware that he runs with the idea as it builds momentum. He does, at first, he hasn't got a clear picture of... Like, he's not like, all right, I'm going to kill people and I'm going to, like, split myself into two and not realise it's me. Like, he's not like that. He just... I think he gets, like, a creative idea that this hand is out there. Because like, he's constantly thinking about his hand when he's lost it. And he's, like, having dinner and a meeting and he's, like, seeing the lobster legs move. And he's, like, he's obsessed. But I think he's getting he's slowly becoming insane. Not just... I don't think it's inconsistency. I think they are trying to tell a story of a man coming up with the origin for his weird... their own reason he's going insane. He's explaining it away and he's coming up with it as he goes. That's what I think of it as.
But... The lobster legs moving is never brought up again. I'd actually forgotten about that until you brought it up because it's far too early in the story.
Mm. There's a few things that they drop. The other one that I wanted to mention was that he does another picture after he's lost his hand.
Yeah.
That he doesn't remember doing, but it's very well drawn, if grotesque. And that never happens again.
Yeah, also teaches you the lesson that if you want to sleep with someone, you should draw a really obscene picture of them and put it somewhere where they'll see it, but then never reference it and wait for them to come to you with their proposition.
I want to talk about the wife, but seeing as we're talking about the woman he sleeps with, she's such a rubbish part of the film because essentially he just, like, Michael Caine to support his annoying wife, and himself, I guess. He has to go and... He lives in a rubbishy cottage in California and has to become a teacher, teaching in a, like, sort of low-end college, some kind of drawing class. And in that class, they're all sort of... they all don't really know why they're there, it seems.
Yeah. What was that about? Like, why... Like, Bruce McGill's character tells him, oh, yeah, all the students are excited to meet you because, you know, comic book artist or whatever. No one is even... Like,
they don't give the slightest hint of caring.
No, they don't even seem to know what comic books are. Yeah. Like, he asks him, what's your favourite comic book? Mm-hmm. And like, asks one of the students, he's just like,
And they all seemingly are like that. And I don't know why. Yeah. There's plenty of people who have a passion for comics, even back then. Like, and as an illustration student, I'm kind of frustrated. It's like, you guys got, presumably, a famous, like, comic book... like illustrator to teach you, and you're like, well, I haven't even thought about it, just in the class because you know,
they
need something
even
to do.
That one guy who was a bit nerdy and weird about it.
Yeah, no,
there'd be one
kid who's actually interested, and is like, why isn't there like a maniac fan in there or something? No, turns out the kids of California are not interested. Yeah. But that aside, they set up this teaching job, you know, and they have one of the students basically. Just turn up, like this young female student turns up at his house and is just really poor-faced and serious and is just comes in and just wants a beer and confidently sits there. And then he's like, yes, hello, can I help you? And it's just like, yeah, we're going to be making love. Really, like, really stilted, boring love scene with your fist in a little glove in my face. And it's going to be really pedestrian and kind of oddly cynical and sad.
I've never seen a sex scene in a film where anyone is as unenthusiastic as Michael Caine.
Well, she is. She's like a board, just encouraging him, but in a way that you would that implies that she doesn't care either way.
Yeah.
It's very empathetic. I encouraged
him in a way. It was like she didn't know he was there.
I like her seduction method is basically just takes her top off.
Yes, it's very odd.
That's it. That's all she does.
If anything, it should have been his fantasy. That shouldn't have been real, because that's a student just turns up at your log cabin without knowing where you live and decides to sleep with you. You're right, good one. As if
she did it because he drew an obscene picture of her and in her sketchbook.
It makes no sense why she's interested. Other, it's just sort of she's disinterested in her own life because she works in a supermarket, and is like her and all of her colleagues in the school are just sort of shrugging their way through life. And it's just why don't these people have a personality and something going on? I don't know, because never mind. Let's have another scene where the hand murders someone, and it's just so pointless and awkward and just there to be. I don't know why it's there. It's no, other than you need a victim. And to get annoyed at someone else.
She was put there to, I guess, kind of reinforce the fact that him and his wife are splitting up for really vague reasons. Like, she... I don't even... Like, he's really into his work. So
and she's really into her New Age weirdness.
Yeah.
Therefore, they should split up or something.
Well, we could have come in on their relationship having it already gone stilted. We don't know why. They've never been... They don't seem to gel like a married couple or like any love there at all. We've come in way after the marriage is over, only that it hasn't technically finished yet.
I couldn't understand why they were ever together.
Yeah.
Based on how they were together.
Yeah, they really seem to quite actively dislike each other.
And she feels guilty enough about leaving him to stay with him through the hard times a little bit and see him through his like accident. And it's kind of like... Well, you must love him enough to bother staying, but you're also being betrayed as you obviously just loved him for the money. And she's so horrible because, okay, love sometimes goes and marriages split up and fair enough. But it seems like their relationship is he pays for everything in their life. And then she's like, yeah, I'm going to go live in New York. I know you like to write out here in your cabin, but it's not for me. I'm going to live in New York. It'll be fine. We'll stay married. You can still pay for my apartment. And yeah. I'll see a... yoga instructor guy and do New Age nonsense, and you'll just pay for everything, and we're not splitting up, and then I'll have an affair, but I won't tell you about it till later. It's just, well, you're really horrible, and you're making out like it's obvious that that's fine, you know?
Yeah, I know. That's the other thing as well. Everyone just, she just kind of shrugs off the fact that, yeah, I'm sleeping with the instructor, who cares? And it's like... Nobody. I can't think of a single likable character in this film.
The kid is quite nice.
Kid was okay.
What did you think of the daughter, Abby? I mean...
Well, she wasn't around a whole lot. But she did seem just so... It was the way she said, yeah, but I'm on a diet. Just made me want to punch her in the face.
Ah, but that's there to bring more resentment to Michael Caine for this new age guy that his wife's seeing is changing her daughter. She's the only nice thing in his life. And then because they've been away from Michael Caine for so long, and she's being influenced now, and it's like a child shouldn't be on a diet. But the kid is mostly nice and friendly to her dad, and is the only... thing, and it's almost like that's the last straw, is her changing, is like that's what pushes him further into this madman character. But there are times when after it's implied that Michael Caine has attacked his wife, and he doesn't seem to be aware that it's him, the daughter doesn't really care that much. She's like, stop hurting mummy. And then when the police catch him, it's like, she's just like, oh, you're horrible. Well, you loved him. You loved him. You can't... I mean, you're shocked, yes, but come on, child. It's still your dad. You don't understand what's going on. You're far too young. Like, you know. But, whatever. I think she is a nice character, and she does a fine job, you know? Like,
I think, she's not... The child actor who played her wasn't terrible, and she... is the only character I think I didn't actively dislike all the way through the film.
Like, you don't feel sorry for anyone dying, apart from Matey, homeless guy, who maybe doesn't die. That could be a fantasy sequence.
And it's never a shock when somebody gets killed off in this film. Like, there's no element of surprise through the whole film. The only time I think I jumped or had any kind of reaction was the cat making a noise.
And smashing through a window. That was amazing. I love the fact that they just... They played it like the cat was behaving weirdly and burst through a window. And that was meant to be a bit weird. But they threw a prop cat at the window. It makes no sense.
It also doesn't tie in with anything else.
Oh, the cat's
Oh, yes, I have a severed hand that has a mind of its own, therefore this cat jumps through a window.
Yeah, it's spooked by the hand that's crawling around.
What happened to the cat? Like, he moved to California and she moved to New York.
It wouldn't surprise me if the cat never came back after it jumped through the window.
Yeah, probably.
It got a different job. It became the cat Salem in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. But I think one of the things that they're trying to do is have... They're trying to really play with the idea that there's this hand that's out there all the time. Like, for Michael Caine, he knows his hand is always out in the world, and he has a sort of somewhat psychological bond with it in some way. And he also, like, you know, the whole accident was, you know, a silly car crash that, oh, his wife caused it as well. He's going to resent his wife. I hate his wife. I think I've come close to murdering her. She's so horrible. And she's just so, no, I'm fine. You're horrible. No, you're being a horrible woman. You're cheating on me and leaving me and being passive aggressive. And you're depriving me of my child and shrugging it off like, no big deal.
The whole, like, breakdown of their marriage revolves around her going, a bunch of times. Like, that's it. That's what everything amounts to. And then, and the scene where he lost his hand as well was actually quite entertaining.
Ridiculous as well. Just, do you want to describe it a bit?
I like the really, pun, heavy-handed foreshadowing of the woman behind them trying to overtake because they're behind a really slow, like, truck. And he's, like, sticking his arm out the window. Get back! Get back! And then what happens? Why is, like...
They're having an argument. Yeah, and she decides, I'm going to New York without you, even if you don't say it's okay. And then she speeds up to overtake, but there's something out, there's a car coming, and they pull in, and everyone seems to brake somehow. And then his hand...
out the window to get that woman to, like, back off. And then as they're approaching the other truck, he doesn't think to pull his arm back or anything. And his wife seemingly just drives the car into the truck beside them.
Yeah. I guess some reason the truck must be braking and therefore his hand is cut off and thrown into a field and they crash. And then blood is spurted in Michael Caine's face and his wife's face and it's ridiculous.
And then the best part is, like, they're sticking him in the ambulance and everything, and she goes and pokes around in the bushes quite casually looking for his severed hand. Like, she doesn't seem particularly shocked at what's happened.
She herself is not suffering in any way from the psychological ramifications.
So who cares?
I mean, Abby, you're a cold-hearted woman who would happily sever a hand and then be blasé. Do you think it was a realistic interpretation of your womenkind?
I'm not 100% which specific parts you're referring to, or if you're referring generally.
Did you relate to the fact that this woman is cold and heartless? as a woman, is that just how women are, or are they misrepresenting humans generally?
I am sad to say that she is a representative of a certain proportion of women who were born without hearts.
But is she meant to be? Like, is this in any way intentional, or is this just they didn't really think any of her script through?
I think it is a script written by someone who really is resentful of their ex-wife and has gone through a divorce and has come up with this. They must have had revenge fantasies where they killed their wife over and thought they came up with this as a way to exorcise their hatred of their wife, because it just must be written with someone who's got issues and resentment for some woman in their life, you know? I'm not saying specifically the writer, definitely, of the book or the screenplay, but there's somewhere there is a lot of hatred and resentment for women.
Also, the hand is right there. Like, it's right in the grass, and everyone walks really close to it and nobody finds it.
And then we also get weird point of view of the hand shots. Like, there's bits where the hand is crawling after people. Like, Michael Caine looks for his hand a few days later or whatever. And it's like, okay, it'll be rotten now, but he kind of wants to know. He wants it to sort of...
Wants to know.
Yeah. I mean, and to, you know, deal with it, perhaps. And it's rotting away. But it then is following him and the camera. And it's like, okay, so guys, you realise you're just putting a camera across the grass here to imply that the hand is there, but not confirming that the hand is walking yet. It was kind of, before we've seen the hand do anything, you're implying it's walking in the grass with him. But it's
the best bit of that is the sound that signifies it's from the hand's eye view.
Yeah.
Is like a breathing sound. Yeah. And I thought, yeah. What?
The hand kind of lets out gasps when it's attacked as well. It sort of has a death scream at one point.
Oh, it is. It's the scene from Evil Dead 2 with all the comedy, all the intentional comedy removed.
He finds his special ring, which he has on his hand, of course, to signify.
Which he doesn't like.
Yeah, he doesn't like it, and he's lost his hand. But he gets it back, or he doesn't, because he's gone missing again. And or the ring wants it. The hand wants to be back with the ring, so it steals it from his ward where he's keeping it. And it's just okay. So why does the hand care? The hand has motives now. All of his hate is now in the hand, and it's alive, and it's killing people because why? It seemed to be quite happy illustrated before. If it's alive, why can't it continue illustrating?
Yeah, what's why can't it help him out in a more practical fashion by, you know, carrying on drawing his comics and making him money?
That'd be a great story if Michael Caine is somehow blacking out and he's doing his work and he thinks, I must be just doing it with my left hand, but actually his other hand is still alive. It's like a buddy-like movie with him in his hand. And he has to keep it a secret because no one would believe that his hand is alive and still drawing.
See, then you cast Eddie Murphy instead of Michael Caine.
What else haven't we discussed? We haven't discussed Bruce McGill's character very much, have we?
No. I forget what he teaches.
Poncho wearing.
At first he says psychology, but then he says pretty much anything he can get 15 students to sign up for.
He's clearly just blagging classes for paychecks. He's one of those kind of teachers. Yeah, today I guess we're doing pottery. Is everyone into that? Yeah, whatever. It's the kind of California class where we don't care. As long as we get the credit for it on our whatever we need, then you just carry on. Let's have a beer drinking class. Why not?
I don't really know what kind of college this is. Like, it's because she talks about how, like, the student that Michael Caine's character sleeps with talks about how, like, you never have to graduate or something. You just keep going back and doing classes. And
it's like the same place as Greendale from the sitcom Community, I think, where people just sort of stay there and keep doing courses forever. Yeah, I don't know. Some kind of rubbish college, whatever it is. And so Abby, like, Bruce McGill also hangs out at this really hick dive, like, bar full of, like, grumpy-looking cowboys and strange people, doesn't he?
I don't know if it is representative. I would hope that it's not representative of bars in California.
Well, there must be some that are cowboy bars specifically. What's it called? The Last Chance or something?
The Last Chance Saloon. Oh.
And it's like all the worst country music fans are there. And it's just, they're all just personified beer cans, aren't they? Just with moustaches and just cowboy hats and hairdos that are horrible. And they all look as annoyed as both Michael Caine and Bruce McGill are with their own lives.
Yeah.
Everyone in the bar is just, we've all got hands killing people in our minds. A few people are maybe having a nice time because they found someone else who likes line dancing or whatever, but I don't know, it's a really horrible bar. And I don't even know, like, a British guy going there, something wrong with him, he wouldn't go there. He'd find some rubbish Irish pub that's borderline offensive to the Irish because nothing represents them at all. But for whatever reason, that's where he hangs out with Bruce McGill. I don't even know where he makes friends. Any ideas, guys?
Well, it's that thing. When you first go to a place, you the first person you meet, more or less, you give a chance to.
Yeah.
And they may or may not make the cut later on when you meet more people.
I think the problem Michael Caine's character has is he's so unlikable. How is he going to make any friends?
And he's quite, when Bruce McGill presses him, when Bruce McGill thinks Michael Caine might have been seeing this girl that he has been seeing, Michael Caine instantly cares and is kind of frightened of Bruce McGill, even though Bruce McGill is just a lame kind of bragging drunk guy. Like, he's still really kind of frightened of him.
I like Bruce McGill's, like, hang on, you've been having blackouts. You killed her. I'm going to call the police.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Michael Caine gives enough away that Bruce McGill guesses correctly. I agree with you.
Especially considering how drunk he was.
He's got a great reaction face, though. When he's thinking about it, Michael Caine's feeding him lies, and he's just thinking about going, yeah. And he's sort of swaying a little bit and sort of looking away. He's just drunk having a realisation face. Spot on, Bruce McGill. But whatever, it just means that Michael Caine has another excuse to kill someone. And they play it out like he's frightened of him, and then it's like, luckily, I guess Bruce McGill's car breaks down after he's had a confrontation with Michael Caine, and the hand attacks from nowhere, and Michael Caine's just like, ha-ha, yeah.
I was, expecting the film had gone all out at that point. That hand had cut the brake line, or whatever.
That's what I thought as well.
Yeah, the hand had sabotaged the van, the truck, whatever, so it couldn't start. And then grabbed Bruce McGill by the throat, which made him projectile vomit blood all over the windshield.
Yeah. But then, just in reality, it is revealed that Michael Caine did this all along, so has he had the conversation, and then as soon as he's back down and Bruce McGill's gone away, has he got out and he's all confident and then goes over and kills him? Or has none of this happened? Has he just instantly attacked Bruce McGill and murdered him?
I have a question, actually, which comes a little bit further on. You know, when the end sequence of the film where the hand attacks his wife, and then he has the fight with the hand in the garage, and then wakes up later on, the police make him open the boot of his car because of the smell.
Mm.
And the body of the girl who he murdered, the one he was sleeping with.
Yeah.
Who's the other guy?
Bruce McGill.
Yeah, the other one's Bruce McGill.
But they say they found him in his truck.
No, they found him in the truck.
Oh, okay. I thought they said that they found his body.
No.
They found his vehicle abandoned.
Okay.
It's an interesting scene to talk about, though, because there's a nice bit of... There's rain, and the rain is on the sheriffs and cops that have turned up to his house after he's attacked his wife and the little girl fawned. After Michael Caine, he's attacked his wife, because, fair enough, at that point, she's... I'm not condoning it, but... I understand. he's attacked his wife, but he's also in bed going, yeah, go on, hand. Oh, glad you're strangling in her next door. And then presumably gets guilt and gets up. But then the little girl interrupts and it looks like he's been doing it, but he has been doing it, blah, blah, blah. Like, basically, the wife is attacked but survives. And the little girl has called the police because Michael Caine said to, fair enough. And then he goes and fights himself for a bit in the garage, thinking the hand is after him now. What would happen if the hand killed him and then still out there at large killing more people? But the hand killed himself, so I don't know how that would work.
If he's controlling the hand and it kills him, then it's dead. But clearly
it doesn't obey logic, so that it would carry on.
My favourite bit of that garage fight was the hand climbing up his trousers.
Yeah. That was. It was disquieting.
I know, and then when it reaches the groin, he gives a little shout, and then it comes out, and it's like the hand got there, just gave him a bit of a squeeze, and then carried on going.
Because at the end of the day, he misses the touch occasionally, and it just bursts out of his trousers and at him, strangling him. And it is ridiculous watching Michael Caine do it, and then the way it escapes is after it gets stabbed by Michael Caine. He stabs himself in his hand, whatever, and he's also trying to reach for the knife with his severed hand for some reason initially, but it escapes by grabbing a tyre that somehow deflates instantly, and hides under the flattened tyre, and then Michael Caine is doomed and passes out or whatever at some point after being strangled and sticking his tongue out and going But there's an element of tension there as well as coming at, and it's the rain looks a bit like the cop is sweating, and there's a lot of tension as the cops are kind of suspicious of this guy who's essentially lying in his garage after his wife's been attacked, and then gets up and is like, all right, oh, that was a weird night's sleep.
I must have passed out. Okay, then.
That explains everything. Why is your daughter distraught and your wife all attacked and no one else here and the smell of death? Oh, but I did like that Michael Caine is like, whatever, we can look in the boot. Oh, you all think I'm a murderer? Oh, I'll show you. I will show you. Oh, my goodness, there's actually corpses. I like that. I liked that that's how they did it. As silly as it is and as schlocky as it is, there were times where I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I do like the most, actually, is that He doesn't know until he opens the boot. He has no idea that it's him.
No, but why does he resist opening the boot?
I think he's just worried a bit because he's not. Maybe he knows inside. His subconscious is like, dude, we are caught. And that his conscious is like, whatever, I'm not a murderer, gosh. Yeah. So I think a bit of turmoil. And to add tension, I guess, from a filmic point of view. And then they tackle. Go on.
It's a character thing, I think, as well. Where there are certain kinds of people who, as soon as you say, do this, they'll be like, no. And it doesn't matter what it is. Yeah. They just don't like being told.
Oh, guilty now am I. Suspect is it. But then they tack on, then they instantly cut to this kind of let's wrap up Twilight Zone summing up ending thing where, and see, we'll explain that he did all the murdering and now he's being tested on in an insane asylum and has loads of wires on him and a doctor is sort of trying to help him, in quotation marks, even though she's just probing hate out of him.
Yeah, what kind of therapy was that?
Once we have machines checking your blood, your heart rate, and slightly, you know, unhelpful doctors probing you with questions, basically confronting you with your own murders.
Let's take this insane murderer who has been proven to be an insane murderer, sit him in a chair in front of me with no one else in the room, unharness him, and then tell him over and over again how he's an insane murderer.
we're making progress because, you know, I let you crush my hand and now I'm not worried about you. And it's just that,
as soon as she said, she says something like, I can handle your hate. You knew she was dead. No, you can't. No one can. You shouldn't say that to anyone at any point.
And then the kind of like thing happens where she's blasély going, oh yeah, why are you all cross? Your heart rate's off the charts. Why are you all cross then? I see the hand and it's on your neck. And I'm like, Michael Caine's just telling her calmly and slightly aggressively that the hand is still there. And we're all like, no, it's not. And then, oh, the hand is there. And it's strangling her.
She was so horribly having none of it as well. It's like, oh, there's a hand that's on your neck. No, it's all you. This must be just their, first session? Maybe second session? I don't think they're in a position to be all, no, it's you.
But, Abby, you mustn't forget, this is in Michael Caine's head. So she has unstrapped him unwisely, and then presumably at that point he's instantly tried to kill her and has imagined a slightly more clever scenario with his hand faffing about. So presumably she was like, okay, I'm going to let you out. Oh no, you're attacking me. So she maybe wasn't that cocky. This is in Michael Caine's mind potentially, but she still is ends up face down, you know, dead on the floor with her tongue hanging out looking ridiculous. And presumably they went with like a prop for her dead corpse face, and yet couldn't they have just had the woman lie on the ground, not make
face?
Yeah,
it looked really bizarrely artificial.
Yeah, either they put loads of weird makeup on, or they did just use a pretend head. I'm sure they do use. It's really weird the way they make.
I think it's because they smashed it on the floor and blood came out. I think they used a prop head for that purpose so it would smash and bleed.
But they should have just used the actors with a bit of makeup on, really, because it looked odd if that was the case. I don't know. They only see it briefly and it's just like, what was that? That was ridiculous, is what that was.
Oh, that was the other thing as well. When they find the bodies in the boot and it does the flashback of him murdering the student and then it cuts to the student's dead body's face and her eyes are crossed.
Yes. It's like how a child like would imagine people were dead, like tongue out, eyes crossed. I'm dead. you know, it's basically to give that like nice Twilight ending thing of you see, he's still killing. He's insane. That he thinks it's the hand, but he's a maniac now. And what, the wardens will come in and they'll restrain him, and he'll be in the nut house forever. There's no big scary ending, or he's still at large.
Like, it's not like he's gonna. Yeah, he's not exactly Michael Myers or anything, is he? He's just some, like, kind of annoying English guy.
Who thinks his hand's killing people, but in fact it's him. Doesn't matter. He's just a psycho, you know? Like, it's kind of weird.
If he's restrained and he's in a mental hospital, they take his incredibly strong, fake metal hand off him.
You know, they're trying to rehabilitate. Oh, it doesn't matter. The film ended at that point, so that's all we need to worry about. It's just such a like it's kind of a it just it's kind of a clever way to end it where we don't worry about the ramp, like we don't spend ages with him coping with coming to terms with it. We just have a kind of funnier ending.
I was going to say, I think a lot of that is the fact that we don't care about any of the characters in it.
It's just like, yes, yes, let's wrap it up, guys. Well done. And now he's still killing and he thinks it's the hand. There we go. But I still think it's a comedy. I don't know about you guys. Now that we've chatted about it a bit, would you agree? It's a comedy, first of all.
I mean, it's funny, but...
I think people will think it's terrible if they don't embrace the laughter. Because if you don't, it is awful. You have to have the sense of humour to laugh at it, not just let it pan out really boringly.
I can't get past that it's directed by Oliver Stone.
I think it helped when I watched it the first time that I hadn't noticed it was directed by Oliver Stone.
And that's the other thing as well. Like, apart from a couple of the horror in inverted commas scenes, everything's really drab. The whole film is really just flat, and it is nobody cared, and all the scenes are shot with this kind of whatever kind of feeling to them.
The lighting isn't particularly amazing at times as well, because they're in the cottage which he's bought to live in, to so he doesn't have to commute very far.
And... He's it's a rental, but the college is renting it on his behalf.
Ah, but it's like the worst lame cottage with lots of other people's things in it that no one wants.
Yeah.
Just he seems to own objects that have been there since the cottage was lived in by someone else. It just doesn't... There's no reason why he should... obviously his wife's horrible, but he's lost his hand. It's a lot to deal with. He might have some issues, but he should be able to pull his life together. He doesn't need to be with his wife anymore. He has to try and stay there. I think he should have been able to cope with this. It's harsh to lose your hand and have a terrible marriage, but man up, Michael Caine, yeah? You could have dealt with that.
Maybe if he didn't have to keep seeing his wife all the time.
Yeah, if she wasn't I'm leaving you, but I'm going to turn up constantly, and I'm also going to turn up at your place and not leave after I've told you I'm having an affair.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, are you going to go? And she basically goes, no, I'm going to stay here for a bit.
I think
I'm going to go shopping, though.
Yeah, she's very confident that Michael Caine isn't going to do any... because Michael Caine can, legally at least try and fight for his daughter and deprive her of that. And it's he does have rights to his child, even if you guys are splitting up. You can't be so blasé. No, the girl stays with me. I don't care about you. And you can pay for everything as well. It's odd.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I guess pushes him is because he can't do the comic himself anymore... They bring it. His agent wants to bring in a new artist to do it. And this agent's a cocky young guy, and he's got other ideas to bring it up to date. And they have a meeting in an office. And Michael Caine's like, I hate you so much. And the guy's just like, whatever, guy. I'm just doing it modern. Yeah, get it with the times, granddad. And I just go, yeah. As an illustrator myself, I'm just like, yeah, don't do my project wrong, you cocky young upstart.
I assumed that the hand was going to kill that guy.
It would have been nice.
Maybe it did, but I doubt anybody cared.
Yeah.
But it
instead
does,
it killed a hobo, played by Oliver Stone.
Or didn't. I think it did it in grey, Jamie, as if to go, is it real? Probably wasn't. Maybe he didn't do it. Maybe he did. Does it matter? But he does. Seemingly the hand has scribbled on all of the comic designs the guy did before he came to the meeting.
I liked that as well, because it was so childish.
I thought the kid did that. I know she did, but I assume she did.
It hints that she did. I think it's trying to kind of throw the audience, who, if had they not seen the trailer or the title of the film, might have thought, oh, maybe it was. Who knows?
Yeah, there's a scene that's there to sort of establish the yoga instructor guy being... being a bit too close to the guy's wife, and also to show that the kid still likes him. And the kid is quite a good drawer. She's doing a nice little... I mean, I'm assuming she didn't do it, but she's doing a nice drawing. She's taking after her dad.
Yeah.
And then they have the thing to establish Michael Caine going to go in. It's weird, but it could have been my kid. He's trying to eliminate the fact that it could have been the kid. Oh, it wasn't the kid. Maybe she's lying. It's my hand. Oh, no!
What is it? I just... Before I forget about it. I do love the way that they dressed the love rival, the yoga guy. They put him in that leotard that just cuts exactly in the way to make him look like a git.
I don't think yoga instructors in any film or TV show have ever come across good. I don't know in real life, I haven't met any. But they always come across like these sleazy pervs who want to get with all of their students and are just pretentious and kind of horrible new age gits.
They're like a really like fey, soft but still a sinister version of PE teachers.
Yeah. Lechery, but kind of modern and just just horrible. I don't know. And but that's the thing is the film tries to get you on Michael Caine's side by kind of making you go, oh, it is horrible what you're going through. But at the same time, I don't condone you killing people or the hand. Oh, it's weird because it's meant to be like the hand is at large and also Michael Caine's life is getting worse. And then it makes sense in terms of the reveal, but at no point do you buy into the idea that it's actually the hand. Like, you're all just going, oh, poor Michael Caine. He's lost it. Or you're thinking, look at his insane hair. I can't stop looking at it. There was that time in the 80s where Michael Caine had thick hair that didn't look right no matter what he did with it.
He's like a precursor to Nicolas Cage as far as like awful hairstyles across the board go.
I was going to say that he was in the same club as Gene Wilder as your hair got to a certain length, you looked mental.
Yeah, I was actually reminded of Gene Wilder a few times.
Oh, that's how it would have been perfect. As the comedy version, you put Gene Wilder in it, and you go full, like, ridiculous Gene Wilder, just comedy.
Particularly, you know, early 80s, See No Evil Gene Wilder.
Yeah, I would have loved to have seen that, like, version. That it definitely needed to be. I don't think they could have made it into a serious horror. This is my summing up, I guess. See, this we're about that stage is, it couldn't have been a serious horror, no matter how well directed or well thought out or rewritten it was. There's no way that this idea makes sense as a proper horror idea. But a comedy. Now we're talking. It could have been a proper full bone. It could have been a proper full-blown comedy, like Gene Wilder in it, have it directed by, what's the name of that guy who did Blazing Saddles?
Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks comedy, about a kind of horror satire thing, and that would have worked. But I think, as is, there are moments of tension, but there's mainly moments of there are moments of genuine tension and drama, but it's mainly hilarious for being terrible. That's what I would say. So you guys have at it. You give your opinions to contradict or agree with mine. What about you, Jamie, seeing as we let Abby finish it off, I think?
I still think that the basic idea has merit, that it could be done as a reasonably good horror film, especially if you were going to go the, like, you know, he's just insane thing and the killer hand is his way of, like, separating himself from what he's doing. But it would be this film proves, because it was directed by Oliver Stone, that to do that properly would be really hard. And it is funny in places, obviously not intentionally, but it's like when it's not funny, it's so boring.
Like, inexplicable. So many of the scenes play out like, this isn't how people behave. This is just weird. Weirdos who can't react to life properly.
This is just really unlikable, irritating people who don't seem to care about themselves as well as anyone else. And they're just kind of meandering around the place going, and then like, and then getting killed by a disembodied hand.
Yeah, you don't care that the people who died because they weren't that particularly interesting or nice.
Yeah, and until they get strangled, they don't seem to care whether or what they're doing either. Yeah. Like, the only one who seems to care about anything is Bruce McGill, because he wants to have sex with that student who Michael Caine did.
Yeah, that's, at least he's got motives in life. He likes getting drunk and trying to sleep with his students.
But it's just, between the accidental stabs at comedy, it was just so drab and boring. And I don't know if part of it is because I was having a hard time paying attention 100%, but I just found like, or whether it's just the characters were poorly written, or maybe it was a problem with the editing, but there were times when the plot wasn't happening, like the actual hand-related stuff, where I didn't really know what was going on. Like Michael Caine just seemed to end up places.
That happened a few times.
And he didn't seem to know or care that he, and everyone was just shrugging, and the whole film just kind of shrugged.
Yeah. And it does seem like there's times where Michael Caine is arguing his point of, well, okay, I'm not saying I'm exactly right, we must do what I want, but let's talk about us moving house or me paying for somewhere else for you to live. And then it's like, I've had an accident, I guess we moved in somewhere now. Okay.
Yeah, well,
they seem to not establish locations with
yeah,
clarity.
Yeah, no, I know. And locations that look vaguely similar, so you're not entirely sure where he is until he has to say it on the phone.
Yeah, every location, we're kind of in a different room. So what if one bedroom here, one living room there, we're like, well, I don't know, where are we now? Sorry.
Yeah.
There was an element of that. But what do you think? And also, guys, we haven't come up with a symbolic metaphorical rating system thing that we do, and I still don't know what to call. Just our film bin rating system. Some kind of vague metaphor that relates to the film. And I've got one in mind, and I'm thinking hand-related ones. So have a think. But Abby, what did you think?
I think I don't disagree that there aren't massive problems with the hand as a movie. But I think I come out on the side of liking it in the end. Because I like how... I don't know if lo-fi is appropriate.
Yeah, no, it is lo-fi.
But I do, it's another one of those movies that is just, it's a cat with one eye or a dog with one ear. You just sort of look at it and go, aww, poor little thing.
You tried to make a convincing prop for every bit of the scene, but they just look so rubbish and silly. And you'd get an A in college, especially the college Michael Caine taught in, but no, we can't take you seriously, sorry. But you find it,
if it wasn't funny when it was funny for intentionally or no, it's occasionally funny and I like it for that, and then I forgive the rest because it's sort of sweet.
It's a sweet naive attempt at horror, but it actually is hilarious because it's so rubbish. And to sort of shoehorn in the hand analogy, I would say it's like Mickey Mouse gloves that you get in costume shops, where you have a big cartoon glove you stick over your hand to make it look like you got Mickey Mouse hands. It's if that was psychotic, one of those covered in blood. It wants to be scary and sinister, but it's still a Mickey Mouse gloved hand. So it's silly and dopey. And this film is that kind of thing. Just part comedy, part gore, part ridiculous, you know? Anyone else want to chip in with a hand analogy?
I'm not sure if it quite fits the criteria, but I have a real problem drawing hands.
They are tricky. I find them hard too. They can go in so many positions. What do they look like from every angle? Ah.
And a problem I have most often is I've drawn the fingers absolutely fine, and they look fine in proportion to each other. And then I suddenly get to the thumb, and I go, I'm not sure where you're supposed to be exactly, how low you're supposed to be to the fingers, or how long the thumb is supposed to be. And then they spend a good 20 minutes just trying to draw thumbs, rubbing them out and trying to draw it again, and it never, ever goes right.
They are
so
tricky.
I feel like that's what this is, where they tried to draw a hand, and then they got to the thumb and went, oh, no!
Yeah, they haven't come up with the drawing ability of the girl in Michael Caine's class, who's other than the one drawing that Michael Caine did, they're all just, wow, you are poor at drawing. And don't care in any way about trying.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a badly drawn hand.
They tried really hard on the four fingers and then got to the thumb, but just panicked.
They made it look like cried. They made it look like a bunch of bananas instead of a hand. Mm-hmm. JB, do you have any hand things so we can sign off this podcast?
I bite my nails quite, ferociously. And what this film is I don't know if you've ever, cut a nail too short.
Yeah. Ooh, I have.
So that it's this continuous irritation that isn't interesting enough to complain about.
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Or do anything about either.
Yeah, you can't do anything. It's just there and it's throbbing and you can't like be, you can't tell anyone, oh, look what I've done to my nail, because they just, it's, that's it. It, who cares?
Unless your nails come to life after they've been severed and try to kill you.
That would be disgusting.
Not a good idea for a sequel. But it's the sort of niggling rubbishness that you, that doesn't, yeah, bear talking about.
This, this uninteresting irritation.
That we have now talked about at length, so maybe we shouldn't have. Maybe that would have been the better thing. But we have talked about The Hand, and I don't disagree. There are a lot of horrible things, and not just the way the rotting hand looks. It looks terrible, and it pulsates, and looks silly.
But I think the thing in this movie that made me most uncomfortable was when he bit the hand. I was just thinking, oh, that would be disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh.
So maybe we shouldn't have talked about it. Maybe it's a bloody Mickey Mouse hand, or maybe it's just the terrible drawings of Abby. It's like, sorry, your terrible inability to draw hands. Whatever it is, we talked about it, and I think that'll do. So let's say goodbye.
Bye!
Bye!
I'm waving with my non-severed hand. Ooh. Or am I? Has it been severed and is now killing people? No, it's not.
Not waving.
I'm just not waving. I think I'm waving, but really I'm just intensely gripping with my, my other black-gloved hand. No, I'm not. Goodbye.
Bye.